This is episode number 287 with Richard Lee of the Founder Podcast.
What you need is thirst. You need to be a thirsty human
who is intent on learning.
It's a really fascinating exploration of human potential.
Now, the Founder Podcast. Even the greatest entrepreneurs had help. If you want to learn from the most successful founders on the planet, you are in the right place. Branson, Mark Cuban, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, Arianna Huffington, Seth Godin, Steve Case, Gary Vee, Sophia Amoroso, Robert Corcoran, Damon John. Learn from the greatest minds in business today with interviews hosted by Nathan Chan. This is not your average entrepreneur podcast. The Founder Podcast.
Hey guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Before we start today's episode, I just want to let you know that our goal at Founder is to help entrepreneurs succeed however we can by giving away high quality content in the form of interviews, blog posts, podcasts, YouTube videos, you name it. We put out so much content to help you. And another interesting project that we're working on right now is partnering with world-class founders like Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills like negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free trainings with founders like this, which is 100% free, just go to founder.com/free. Okay, so now let's talk about today's episode. What's going on, Founder fam? Nathan Chan here, CEO and publisher of Founder Magazine, and welcome to the Founder Podcast. Now, today we have an incredible guest. His name is Richard Lee, and funnily enough, I just come back from having dinner with him here in Melbourne, Australia. Extremely successful founder. He's created two successful companies, his first Brosa and now his second July. He's taken like July from $0 to $5 million in annual revenue in just 1 year. And very, very smart founder. We talk about his journey. We talk about operations. We talk about scaling supply chain. I just feel really humbled to have him as a guest, to call him a friend. And then also to have him as an instructor of our latest course called E-Commerce Masters. So if you have an e-commerce business and you're looking to scale it, you want to get it past the seven-figure mark, you want to double, triple, or quadruple your e-commerce revenue, you have to check out this course. And make sure you check out the other episodes of this series where we've interviewed each one of these instructors for this course. We have five incredible instructors. They've all built very large e-commerce businesses and they are all specialists in their desired field. So for Richard, we talk about scaling operations, manufacturing and supply chain. Super smart guy. I've learned a ton personally. I'm going to take everything that I've learned and really help my partner Emily with her physical product business. So much for you guys to learn. So guys, if you do want to know more about this incredible course, we are launching very, very soon. By the time you listen to this, the course will be out in the next few days. So make sure you go to founder, founder.com/e-commerce masters. That's founder.com/e-commerce masters. So you can check out the course, sign up for the early bird list if it is not available yet, because we have early bird specials and pricing. We're really, really excited about this course. And I think you're going to get so much value from Richard. All right, guys, that's it from me. If you are enjoying these episodes, please do take the time to leave us a review. It helps us more than you can imagine. And tell your friends, if you have any friends that are founders, please let them know. We're on a mission to building one of the largest entrepreneurial brands around the world, impacting millions of people every single week with our content. All right, guys, that's it from me. Now let's jump into the show. So, Rich, tell us the first question that we ask everyone that comes on is, how'd you get your job?
It's actually a very interesting story because fresh out of uni, I submitted my resume to a few places and I couldn't find a job. I didn't get a response. And I was like, fuck that. I'm just going to do something myself. and I started selling products online on eBay first. Then gradually I found that it's actually more meaningful if I start something myself, start a brand myself with a particular category that needs to be fixed. And the first category we identified at that time was furniture. It was very, very painful to buy a piece of furniture in Australia. And people put in huge, huge margin in all the product they sell. And like what Jeff Bezos once said, your margin is my opportunity. And we identified that being a huge opportunity. That's how we started Brosa. And similar scenario for July Luggage.
When did you start Brosa?
Yeah, we had the idea end of 2013. Yep. And we quickly mapped out, you know, the plan and what we want to do. We launched the business February 2014. Yep. So the business is still growing and is doing fantastic well.
Interesting. And you mentioned that you've kind of taken a step back from Brosa to focus on July.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why is that?
I'm one of those who always want to challenge myself. And I have been with Brosa from day one. You know, when I co-founded the business, and it's been 5 years, and I figured that I need a new challenge. That's the time that I decided to take a step back. And I have two amazing co-founders in the business, and they continue working in the business and with our investors and board members. And I figured the business is at a very stable stage, and I could actually take a step back and do something else.
Yeah, I see. So how did you come up with the idea for July? How did it start? You only launched last year, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So we had the idea because we found that buying a piece of luggage is actually a very bad experience. It's always in the department store or luggage retail chain, and you walk into the store and nobody was helping you. And also everything was done in a traditional retail way, which is going through distribution, and you buy a piece of luggage, and very often something goes wrong with the luggage. You have to find the brand to get fixed or to get repaired, and it's a very, very painful experience. And from my experience at Brosa, we figured there's a better way, which is going direct. We do the design and the product development ourselves, and it's our brand, and we sell to our consumers directly, and we look after the customer as well. And by taking a direct consumer approach, we're actually looking after the customer better.
Yeah, I see. So when it comes to, you know, launching July, what was your go-to market strategy? How long did it take to conceptualize and work on the product and have it ready?
Sure, a good question. We had the idea, I think, May or June last year.
Yep.
And it took us maybe like, I think, a couple of months to figure out the brand, to figure out the products, and to get the design ready. And it took us a couple of months to find the best manufacturer to help us realize the products. So it take roughly about half a year.
Yep.
For us to have the product finalized, to have the brand ready, to have the website ready, and to launch the brand. So we soft launched the brand December last year.
Yep.
And proper launch was February this year, which is February last year, sorry.
Yes.
So which is 2019.
Yeah. I see, yeah, interesting. And in the past year, you guys have had incredible growth and traction. Would you be able to share some numbers around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, as I mentioned, we launched the business February last year.
Yep.
And the business quickly grew. And the entire financial year, we are on track hitting $5 million. And the growth was from, you know, the love of the brand, you know, from a great, you know, customers in Australia, and also just from a good word of mouth, and people talk about the brand and people love the product, people keep coming back to buy more, and that's where the majority growth is from.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah, 0 to 5 mil, even, yeah, like for an e-com product, that's incredible growth. How did you fund it originally? Can you talk to us about that? And I'd love to talk more about the growth strategies and even the scale side.
Yeah, absolutely. When we started, it was just me and Ethan, so two of us.
Yep.
And very quickly, there's an angel investor who wanted to come on board. We thought about it, and it made a lot of sense at the time. So we raised an angel round, with a local investor here. And then earlier 2019, and we got a, you know, someone approached us and wanted to put in more money for our seed round. And we raised like a small amount of seed round. We actually talked about it in the, to the press. It's about $1 million.
Yep.
And right after that, we got approached by two amazing investors, and they want to put in more capital into the business to fuel the growth. And we thought that made a lot of sense. And one of the investors is actually Strandbags, which is one of the largest luggage retail chain in Australia.
Yep.
And it's been crazy year, and also been an amazing year.
Yeah. So I'm curious, do you think you could have launched July without capital?
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Good question, actually. I managed to do that for Brosa. We actually didn't raise any capital for the first year and a half. Like what Jack Ma from Alibaba said, 99% of startups didn't die because they didn't have money. They actually died because they have too much money. And very often, like a lot of startups, they a lot of companies or a lot of people think that, oh, I don't have money, that's why I can't launch a business. And because this job pays me really well, and I'm not going to get the same amount of pay, you know, if I start a business. So a lot of time it's actually not because they don't have money. Actually, they have too much money. So to answer your question, I definitely, if I didn't have the capital, I would do it the same way. It's just going to be a smaller scale.
Yeah, and do you think it would have grown as fast?
Probably not, because there are a lot of tests that you want to do only when you have a good amount of capital behind.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the marketing strategy, because sometimes it's a lot of risk.
Yeah.
You know, you're putting money in a campaign that might not work, might not give you the return. So I don't suggest when you don't have a good amount of capital behind. Yeah. And if we didn't have money, I probably think twice, you know, for the sort of campaign, those campaigns that we're doing. Because we have capital, we could actually play some bets.
Yeah, I see. So, because I think sometimes people look at physical product businesses and you think of, you know, furniture or luggage, very capital intensive type companies. A lot of people think, yeah, you have to go out and raise money.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess to a degree, like correct. Because especially with, because furniture is actually very different. If I talk very specifically about the two different categories, furniture in Australia, if you go out and buy a piece of furniture from Church Street, you actually have to wait for about anywhere between, you know, 12 weeks and 20 weeks, or sometimes even longer. And the entire furniture industry is actually broken. You pay deposit, but you pay a deposit for something they don't have.
Yes.
So that's, we call it negative cash cycle, which is pretty good. That's helped us bootstrap the business for Brosa at the beginning as well, because we could collect money upfront and then pay a deposit to our manufacturers to produce a piece of furniture. So that way, it's actually very easy to build a furniture business from that perspective. For luggage, I guess it's a little bit different, because especially for July, nothing is off the shelf. We have to open modes, we have to do a lot of product development, and there's a very high MOQ, so which means minimum order quantity.
Yes.
I guess when I say I didn't need external capital to build a business, not like 100% correct. You do need some capital.
Yes.
Like in our in our case, each one of us had to put in, you know, like some money, you know, 50 to 100K.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have putting some money to start
a business.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you can't start with zero.
With physical product, it's very, very difficult unless you have amazing term with the manufacturer, and also you don't do product development. You have to buy stuff off the shelf.
Yeah.
That's a different story.
Yeah, yeah, okay, interesting. So one thing that I'd love to talk to you about around the scale piece is, you know, you were an instructor for one of our courses that we're launching soon.
Thanks for having me there.
It's awesome.
I had a lot of fun.
So e-commerce masters, where, you know, your expertise that you teach in that module is around manufacturing and scale and operations.
That's correct.
So, you know, with July in particular, with that kind of scale, 0 to 5 mil in 12 months, that's a lot of products.
Yes.
Sometimes, and even from my experience, manufacturers can't keep up.
Yep.
When you're dealing with that kind of scale, Like, did you have to use multiple manufacturers? Like, can you just give us a bit of an insight there? What should you be doing?
Yeah. So you have to, at the beginning, when you find a manufacturer, you have to make sure that this manufacturer can grow with you, because a lot of businesses, when they start, they work with a small manufacturer, then they grow to a medium size and they have a large size. What you need to make sure is that this manufacturer can actually grow with you. That's the first thing. And the second thing is you want to make sure you have proper planning.
Yes.
You want to make sure that you have, you plan out the next 6 to 12 months time. Very often, like, people forget about planning because factories need to lock in production slots.
Yes.
As long as you give them the production slots and they allocate the production slots for you, then you will be okay.
Yeah.
And when you have, like, explosive growth, you have to make sure that there is another manufacturer, better, bigger manufacturer waiting. So you have to develop those relationships early on. And this is something that I talk about in the course, you know, how you find the perfect manufacturer for your products, for your business.
Interesting. So when you're starting out, for example, do you think you need to go to China to find a great manufacturer, or just test it and, you know, find something off Alibaba? What's your take there, man?
Yeah, absolutely. There are many, many ways to find a great manufacturer. And like I said, I also talk about this in the course.
Yes.
People always have the perception that they have to go on Alibaba and find a manufacturer. Actually, some of the top manufacturers, they're not on Alibaba, or they're not active on Alibaba. You have to use other ways to find them. So there are many, many ways to find them. You know, you can go to the fairs. There's a big one called Canton Fair.
Yes.
There's a, like, International Furniture Fair in Shanghai, in Guangzhou.
Yes.
And the lighting show in Hong Kong, for example. There are many, many ways to find them. There's actually one of the best ways I actually talk about in the course is through software. You can actually use software to find the perfect manufacturer for your products.
Mm.
Especially look at, you know, your competitors in a different market and see who they are using, for example. Mm. You actually find these suppliers. I think depending on the scale that you're in, depending on the product categories you're in, for the category that we are in, which is luggage, it made a lot of sense to go to China. It made a lot of sense to talk to your manufacturer directly.
Yes.
So it really depends on whether you're doing larger products, whether you're doing a huge volume. If you're doing small volume, that's different. If you're doing drop shipping, that's different. So if you're doing your own brand, it makes a lot of sense to go to China, go to the manufacturer and talk to them.
Yeah. Interesting. So talk to me around kind of one thing that I think is interesting is you said planning.
Yeah.
Like, especially, like, you know, we're speaking right now, you know, it's first week of January 2020. We know Chinese New Year's coming.
Correct.
I'm sure, you know, you guys are loading up. How far ahead should you plan? Like, let's just say you've launched your product, you've got some sales coming in right now. Should have you already been back ordering? Like, how do you work out? Because that cash flow can be difficult. So what how far advanced and what are your rules there?
Yeah, absolutely. So you always want to do at least 3 to 6 months.
Yep.
Forward planning.
Yes.
And we always place our last order, before Chinese New Year, our last order in October.
Yes.
Because our production will take roughly about 2 months.
Yes.
And then you have to allow some time for loading and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So you always want to have like 3 to 6 months.
Yes.
In terms of cash flow, what you can do is you can negotiate better term with your supplier. For example, you can put down smaller deposit.
Yep.
Or you can choose not to pay deposit.
Mm.
Depending on the agreement that you have with your supplier. So there are many, many ways to limit your risk.
Yes.
Yeah.
When it comes to, like, if you were to negotiate with a manufacturer, you're starting a new company tomorrow, what kind of favorable terms would you be looking for?
So as a standard term, it's 30-70. So when you go to a manufacturer, they will ask you to put down 30% deposit.
Yep.
And 70% before shipment.
Yep.
As the first first order.
Yep.
Or 70% on copy of bill of lading.
Yes.
So that's like the standard term.
Yep.
I always try to get better term. I think you can actually get, like, say, 10 or 20% deposit.
Yes.
Then the rest on shipment.
Yep.
You can ask for these kind of terms straight away.
Yep.
Sometimes you get a yes, sometimes you get a no.
Yes.
But one thing I know for sure is that you don't ask, you don't get. So I always try to ask these questions. And as you work with the manufacturer like a lot more, you can actually start asking for payment afterwards. So when you have a bit of trust between each other, you can pay 30 day after shipment, 60 day after the shipment, or 100 day after shipment, depending on the arrangement. You can actually talk about this with your suppliers.
Yeah, wow, interesting. And as you grow with your supplier, you're ordering, you know, your company's growing, like you guys, right? You're ordering more. How often should you be asking for, you know, you're ordering more, you're ordering more products, so you get better margin cost per unit, but then also like discounts, all that kind of stuff. How often and what kind of terms would you, like even from a percentage range when you first work with them until higher quantities, like what kind of ranges should we look for?
I mean, there's no set rule like when you ask these sort of questions to your suppliers, but if you think that your volume is like doubled or tripled, you should definitely ask these sort of questions.
Yes.
And you probably get a no. Then what you should do is you should get a quote from a different supplier and go back to them and say, hey, I got a quote from this supplier and it's a lot cheaper. What can you do about it? And then that's the time that they will probably, you know, consider this properly. And there's no set rule, but you should ask these questions.
Coming back to July, like incredible growth. Like I can see you guys building something very, very big and significant. You know, you've come into the market quite aggressively and you've grown quite aggressively. Yes, you had capital, but I would argue that even if you didn't, the product is incredible. Yeah. You've made us like this special founder bag, which we'll show on the screen. It's like so cool. Yeah. I'm like so pumped because I travel a lot because we have offices internationally and whatever. But so thank you. I'm curious, what have you done to differentiate?
Yep.
Because there are a lot of luggages and like there's so many to choose from. What have you done? And to appeal to the younger generation in particular that are buying online?
Well, the major difference from a business perspective is actually the business model. We, first of all, we are digital native and we are direct to consumer. So there's no middleman. The cost of making this piece of luggage is a lot higher than any other brands out there.
Yes.
So something that sells for, you know, $300, $400 in the store probably only costs $20, $30 because there's so many people in the middle and everyone needs to take a margin. But for us, it's a little bit different. We are the only one that take a margin. And because of that, we can actually pass on the savings to our consumers. And something similar like July Luggage, if this were to retail in a proper retail store, well, say Maya David Jones, it would be priced at around $800, $900 in order for everyone to make some money.
Yeah.
That's the major difference. And of course, because we're direct to consumer, we're able to look after customer. We're able to offer 100 day trial. So if people don't like the luggage for any reason, we can return it for free for customers. And plus, there's a lifetime warranty. So anything goes wrong with the case, we'll always look after them. And we're very, very confident because we build the product ourselves, we design the product ourselves, and that's the major, major difference, I would say.
Yeah, that's a pretty incredible offer. Like, I interviewed the founders of Warby Parker, and, you know, similar kind of offer. Like, you can try on the glasses, you don't even need to leave. Yeah. You can, like, incredible warranties, incredible guarantees. And then also, they also have, you know, some special cause that they donate, you know, a percentage of profits and like incredible offer. It's like you can't lose.
Yeah, correct.
You know? Yeah. So talking about service, we actually, you know, we've met each other today for the first time. You shot the course with Zach and all the guys, right? But this is the first time we met. But we, Emily and I, my partner, were going to Vietnam.
Yeah.
We just come back and I'm recently engaged now and I proposed. Thank you. And she needed a new bag and I was like, oh, you should get a July bag.
Yeah.
And, you know, she went to the store in Emporium and she like loved it. And then just before like everyone was going on break about a month ago, the lock wasn't working.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was supposedly like the first time it's ever happened.
Yeah.
Like you,
that's
and,
right. Yeah.
And you didn't even know it was Emily and you actually came to her house like when everyone was like, you know, it's like the end of the year. Why did you do that? Like, why would you take, like, as the CEO of a company, take time out of your day to go and visit a customer and to fix a lock? And she was super embarrassed because as soon as you walked in, she said it like worked straight away. And it's like, and you're like, why did you do that, man?
Yeah. I think for us, what we want to build is like an amazing brand. An amazing brand is reflected in many, many different areas. It's reflected in the product quality, the product design, and ultimately, it's the customer satisfaction. For us, customer satisfaction sit here, on the, right on the top. And we will do whatever to make the customer happy. And just to give you an idea, we had some deliveries that we couldn't get delivered on Christmas Eve day. I basically drove a van and around Melbourne and deliver all the cases myself, one by one. And I needed to do that because I know that some people are gifting, you know, July suitcase to someone else. So it's super, super important for us to look after our customers. And I would do this today, I would do this next year, I would do this, you know, in 5 years' time. I should tell you a very interesting story. We went to see an investor in Sydney right before the round was closed. And we had lunch at the investor's house. And then right after that, I actually scheduled like a repair work for a customer on a different side of the city. When we got there, I fixed the lock for the customer, and the customer actually took a photo and posted on Instagram. That night, she discovered that her sister was actually the head chef at the investor's house. And that was a massive, massive coincidence. And I don't know if that played a played a role in the investment, but we got the investment in the end. So that was a very interesting story.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you know, some people might be watching and it's like, oh, this was set up. Like, he's just saying like July's amazing and like he just visited his girlfriend, but it legitimately was random.
Yeah.
What were the chances that you would just appear at our place in Richmond?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And you sold like thousands of units that month.
We don't really have a lot of product issues. Whenever we have product issues, we take it very, very seriously. You know, is it really a product issue? Is it like a human issue? So we have to find out, you know, what the problem is and resolve it for the customer.
Yeah. So crazy, you know, just like, what are the chances? What a small world.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that Paul Graham talks about in the early days of launching a company is do things that don't scale.
Yeah.
Is that kind of part of?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And the investor, one of the investors we have, Strandbags, was very, very surprised that sometimes we use Uber to deliver. Uber to deliver.
Oh,
because some people just want the case straight away. We're like, you know what? We can make it work. If you're in Sydney CBD, if you're in Melbourne CBD, we can actually Uber to you in the next 10, 15 minutes. And we could do this. And Strandbags was very, very surprised about it. And I completely agree with that. At the beginning, you don't do things at scale. You know, you just do all the little things that make sure your brand is unique to the customer, look after your customers, and ultimately this customer will come back. Ultimately, this customer will tell their friends, their family, because word of mouth is the best marketing tool, and it has the lowest customer acquisition cost.
Yeah, because like, how many people do you think Emily told after that story, and how many people think I told? Like, it's crazy, right?
That's right, exactly.
Talk to me around the direct-to-consumer trend, and you said it's doing really well for you guys that we were talking about, where, you know, every time I go to the States in New York, you'll see a Warby Parker store, you'll see a Casper store. A lot of these big, you know, Glossier, and one of Emily's favorite brands is Glossier. Yeah. So like, you see these big, you know, direct to consumer physical product brands where they have an almost cult following, and they're, you know, very targeted the younger market, and they're so cool. They always have physical stores now, and it doesn't seem like they just stay purely online. You guys did it. Why?
We opened the store August last year, which is exact half a year in business. We believe that business should never just be online. It should also be offline, because a majority of customers are still offline. And it's an extra touch point for people to come in and have a look, you know, have a feel, you know, touch and feel the product and talk to your staff, get to know the brand and get to know the business. And it's working incredibly well, and people discover us through Instagram, through Facebook, and they come in and they touch and feel the product and they purchase on spot, or, you know, they buy online. We actually don't have a target. We don't have a hard target for our offline store, because the offline store for us is a way to, I would say, to get to know our consumers and let our consumers to get to know us. And we don't need our staff to close the sale on spot. It's not a target for us. The target for us in the store is to tell the story and to tell them the product features, to show them the different colors, because online, offline, there's always discrepancy, you know, from your screen and to the physical products. You want them to see the product in person. Then whether they choose to buy or not, whether they choose to buy from the store or online, it doesn't matter. And we've seen huge growth, not just from an offline store, but also online after we have the store back in August last year.
When it comes to like a retail store though, like that is a totally different beast, man. Yeah. Like talk to me about that. Like,
yeah.
Like I personally, if online companies don't, I have no interest in doing a retail. Maybe we'll do a co-working space and bits and pieces like that.
It's a completely different business. I completely agree. But we had thought about it. We thought that's something we need to do. And the way to make it work is to have amazing people. And if you don't know certain things, you make sure you hire the right people for the right job. And that's what we did. We hired an amazing retail manager and teach us what to do. I'm not going to pretend I know everything. And we don't pretend that we know everything about retail. And it's our first store and there is still a lot of learning, but it's a great start. And for us, it made a lot of sense, and it's something that we had to do. It's actually one of the main growth pillars for the business.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's what I've read, that that's what Jeff Bezos does, Amazon, when they're looking to enter a new market, like, you know, for example, cloud storage. Yeah. They hire people that have done it before that are incredibly strong there, and that's where they start to build up their own IP and exactly. start to execute. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You need great people. Because just two of us, we can't do everything. And the huge growth is actually from our team and not just ourselves.
So talk to me around what's next, growth strategy. You said something very interesting to me offline because I was like, oh, man, like, you know, obviously, you know, Asia Pac, and then that's probably going to be your springboard. You did some stuff in Singapore and then probably springboard to US. And you said, oh, no. We're looking at a different market. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, sure. I just said retail store is one of the main pillars of our business. There are actually four growth pillars for July in 2020, and retail store is one of them. Yep. Personalization is one of them. More products and international markets.
Yes.
So these are the four growth pillars for the business. And international is actually very, very important to us. And Asia Pacific is the main focus for us. We recently launched in Singapore. We actually did a hard push, in Singapore, November, December last year.
Yes.
And it's working really, really well for us. We don't have a retail store there yet, but for online, it's working very, very well. And the next big market for us is China. And we're thinking to launch the business sometime this year, maybe second half of the year, to have a presence in China.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So China is a massive market.
Yeah.
Much bigger than the US in many aspects. Well, it is. Yeah, it is bigger than the US. So I'm curious, one of my mentors, his company, they launched in China, and he said it's like totally different. Like it's just, even the way you do business over there. Love to get some insights. Like, you know, if you guys are, direct to consumer brand online, predominantly, and you've got your few kind of flagship stores, and that's the play. You're not going to be using Instagram. You're going to be using your WeChats and the other tools.
That's
like,
right.
So they have all their own tools. So do you set up an office there, hire local people? What do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. You said something absolutely correct. In China, it's a completely different world out there. We're using very, very different services over there. So in Australia, we use Instagram, Facebook, you know, Google a lot.
Yeah.
In China, everything got blocked.
Yeah.
So you actually can't use Instagram. You actually can't use Google there. And you just use something equivalent, you know, like WeChat, Weibo, you know, and now TikTok, you know, in China is pretty big as well. The go-to-market strategy for us is that, obviously setting up a business there and setting up an office, you need to be able to hire local talent to execute a lot of the strategy for you and with you. Because most of the strategies that are working for us in Australia wouldn't work over there. It's just completely different market. And you just need to take a completely different approach. You want to be able to give the decision-making power to the local team.
Yeah, wow.
And Airbnb is actually a great example. They made a very important decision early days when they set up an operation in China. Everything is run and managed by Chinese. And they have one of the co-founders actually moved to Beijing and to work with the local team. But ultimately, the decision is made by the local team. That's exactly what we are going to do over there.
Interesting. And you wouldn't use a distributor, because I know a lot of physical product companies, when they want to get into different markets or different retail stores, they use a distributor, no?
Yeah. No, still no distributor, because July is a D2C brand. We want to be able to control the experience. And because of that, it doesn't matter which market we're in. We want to be able to look after the customer and experience. So the major difference, though, is that as a D2C brand in Australia or in the US, you actually can launch a brand on your own website, like July.com. Mm. In China, it's very, very different. And most of the D2C brand, they actually don't have the website. They actually have a store on Tmall.com or JD.com. They actually don't have a website.
That's
website
crazy.
Don't get traffic at all in China. So that's the major difference. It's a decision that we are still making what we do, whether we make it, we open a store on Tmall or we open a like proper website. The website will be very, very challenging and very expensive to bring traffic to.
July.com is a great domain.
Yeah.
It's four letters. I know how costly it was for us to even get founder.com without the correct spelling, so founder without the E.
Yeah.
How'd you get that?
When we started the business, we wanted to get July.com, but it was for sale, super, super expensive, as you know. Mm. And what we did was that, just like Dropbox when they first launched, it was called getdropbox.com.
Yep.
And we were like, if Dropbox could do that, we could do that as well.
Yeah.
Our first website was getjuly.com.
Yep.
And when we raised capital, and one of the first expenditure was to acquire this domain.
Yes.
And I believe in great name, great domain, because we are a brand. And I want to make sure that we have our July.com. So we reached out to the domain owner and negotiated a deal and finally acquired the domain. And I can't disclose the total amount, but it was expensive.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. Same kind of situation for us. And I agree with you 110%. Yeah, we were founder mag at first. Yeah, but I agree. Like, there is so much weight in a strong domain. People just don't, you just don't see it, right? Like, well, you don't even think about it. But we're even if someone goes to your website and they see, well, July.com, these guys must be legit.
Correct. Instant credibility.
Yes, like so much. Like inherently, like us as humans, because the internet's been around and domain names, we're just trained to think shorter, a whole word or like something very commonly used. Wow, this must be a decent company. Like, it assigns a lot of value.
Exactly. I can't agree more, especially if you want to be around for a very long time and want to build, many, many products under this brand. And I felt like July.com is super important for us.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
No, super cool. So I'm curious as well, when it comes to your first sale.
Yeah.
When did that happen? How did it happen?
I still remember our first sale was end of November when we first launched the business. And it was actually a friend of Ethan's to show support.
Yes.
And it was amazing. We actually got a lot of support from family and friends very, very early days. And I remember when we first launched, each one of them, we gave them a founder tag. Just like when Tesla, launched in Australia, they have a founder edition.
Yes.
So we made each one of them a personalized luggage tag with a founder, stamping at the back.
Yeah.
It's funny because yesterday there was a customer coming to our office and say, hey, I'm one of the originals and I want to buy a larger case now. We're like, what do you mean one of the originals? Look at this. This is a luggage tag. Oh. Yeah. And we were like, then we talk about We told all the staff about the early day story. It was very interesting. And we're very, very lucky and we got a lot of support from people around.
What channels were most effective? Facebook ads?
Yeah, Facebook is very effective for us because we got a lot of UGC, user-generated content, and people submit, people send us the photos and videos when they're using July cases. We actually use them as marketing tools. So Facebook is very, very effective. And also at the same time, bottom funnel, we use a lot of Google Shopping, we use Google AdWords. So it's working very, very well for us as well. And so these are performance marketing. On top of that, you know, obviously we work very closely with our PR team, you know, using PR is an amazing tool for us.
Yes.
Again, it's instant credibility and a lot of brand awareness.
Yes.
And on, you know, top of all of these, you know, we also run, you know, some above the line, you know, radio, you know, interviews, podcasts.
Oh, really?
We actually do a lot of these as well.
Oh.
And yeah, it's working. Everything works, you know.
Yeah, interesting.
So there's nothing. So if you're relying on just one channel, your customer acquisition cost is going to increase over time. You know, you have to have multiple channels working together so that will drive down your acquisition cost.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's our strategy.
True. Yeah, I like that. And curious as well, can hear a little bit of an accent, but still, yeah, like a little bit of an Asian accent.
Yeah.
When did you come to Melbourne? What's your background?
Yeah, my background is Chinese.
Yeah.
I was born and raised over there.
Yeah.
I came here when I was 17.
Yes.
To further my study.
Yes.
So I did 1 year of high school and started, you know, going to Melbourne Uni. And I did finance and economics in university. And it's been great. You know, I love the mixed culture in Australia. I'm also very, very fortunate being able to speak Chinese and understand the culture over there, because this make our, you know, the business side of things very, very easy for us.
Mm-hmm. And how often do you go back?
I try to go back, you know, once every month or every 2 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's important to see what's happening there. It's important to go to our factories and make sure everyone's happy, make sure that our QC is done properly. And, you know, ultimately it's important to be there and to show face.
Yeah, when it comes to doing the QC, what do you use? Do you use a service or you have someone internally or...
We have people internally.
Yes.
From Australia.
Yes.
We actually send our QC guys from Australia to China, to our manufacturers, to QC. And all our cases is 100% QC'd. Every single case is inspected by our QC guys.
Wow, that's crazy. That's a pretty big cost, man.
Not really. Not really. Because the cost of losing customer, the cost of an unhappy customer is actually more expensive.
How did you work that out?
How I work that out is I look at the average lifetime value of a customer.
Yes.
At the moment, our LTV is roughly sitting close to $1,000. If I lose a customer, that means I lose $1,000. So that actually is a lot more expensive than sending a QC guy from here to China and inspecting every single case.
Yeah, wow, interesting. Okay. So talk to me around how you met your co-founder.
Yeah.
How come, like, yeah, how'd you guys meet?
We met in a cafe called A Coffee, so just in Collingwood, because he was running his own business. He's the founder and CEO of a business called 3000 Thieves. It's an online coffee subscription business. So I was running Brossa at the time.
Yeah.
So we always end up working in a cafe, you know, sitting, you know, next to each other. And naturally, you know, in Collingwood, you start talking and we became friends and we talk about business ideas and we talk about, you know, my experience in China, because he launched his business in China as well.
Yeah.
And so when we had this idea, you know, instantly we're like, let's do this. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So talk to me around, I'm curious, you're obviously really strong at product development.
Yep.
What are the rules that you use?
Like, when it comes to product development, my rule of product development is going to the factory. Don't sit in front of a computer in Melbourne and do all the drawings, because very often the technical drawings here do not work, you know, in the factory. You have to be redrawn, you know, at the factory. So my suggestion is, if you're working on a project, make sure you bring this project to the manufacturers, whether your manufacturer is in Vietnam or China, it doesn't matter. Talk to them, because very often they have a very strong understanding of what you want to build.
Yes.
It might surprise you.
Should you try to do local first if you can?
Well, it depends on what products.
Yes.
There's a lot of products. It's actually very hard to even get a prototype in Melbourne now. Mm-hmm. Because we are losing manufacturers in Australia. We don't have a lot of manufacturers and we don't have a lot of, you know, product developers here.
Yes.
So it depends on the category that you're doing. You know, if it's luggage, I 100% you have to go to China. You have to go to Indonesia.
Yeah.
You don't sit here. You don't talk to the manufacturer here, because there's no There's no manufacturers here.
When it comes to product development, the actual product itself in terms of specifications, unique value proposition, how do you work out what it is that people want, what is enticing? How do you make sure you don't have too many features, too less, design a me-too product, all those things, what do you do?
Well, when we started July, we list out all the different product features we think that people might want and people want. Then we rank them.
Yes.
Then after that, we actually talk to real people, people around us and people we don't know, and ask those questions and get them to rank them. Yes. And ultimately, their opinion with our opinion together, we list out the top features that we want to include, we want to have in the product. Sometimes you don't want to have too many features, because having too many features in the luggage, for example, going to end up too heavy. It's always a tough one. It's almost like a piece of art. So you have to make sure that it's something that people actually going to like and people actually going to use. So I think it's a lot of initial research, and it's also product iteration, because you don't develop a product and that's it. You actually change along the way. If you look at our case, for example, this is probably version 3. Even though they look very, very similar, this is already version 3. And we're making more changes this year as well.
Wow. So when you got your first prototype, did you like speak to a lot of people or like...
100%. The first people I speak to is my family. So I show them and get their opinion. And then I talk to friends, we talk to random people. When we develop this product, we ask probably hundreds of different people, and to make sure that we're actually on the right track. We had a lot of different product ideas, and in the end, we shortlisted, and this is the final piece.
Yeah, interesting. And how do you know what to cut and what to keep?
Sometimes, from those... from those feedback sessions, and you make decision, what to cut and what to keep. But sometimes it's also your entrepreneurial, sense, what is right, what is wrong. Because I can't say that this is definitely going to work. Sometimes you have to throw to the market and see what the market feedback is. And we were very, very lucky, because when we launched the product, everybody loves it, Yes. And we're very, very fortunate about it.
Even the colors to choose from, how do you work that out?
Yeah, colors. There are a lot of ways to find the right colors. And, you look at the trend report, you ask people around as well, and you launch with several colors and test. And we're going to introduce more colors as well. We're probably going to do some color refresh this year.
Yes.
So it's there's no set rules what you do. Sometimes it's always a hit and miss scenario, I think.
And you've obviously got your luggage, which is your flagship products. What you said that you're going to launch a full suite of products.
That's right.
What sort of complementary products are you looking to add on?
So anything to do with travel. And we want to elevate people's travel. And the year of 2020 especially is all about self-expression. And when people travel, people want to use like good products. And when people shop these days, they want to shop well and shop once. Like people like us right now, I believe you guys are the same. We want to buy good quality products that we can use for a very long time. I don't want to use a product that's going to break. I don't want to use a product that's going to break it within several weeks or several uses. And that's the sort of product we're going to develop. We're going to develop high quality products that are going to complement your travels. And we're going to complete the entire family, starting with soft ranges and some other accessories. So 2020 will be a big year for us. There'll be a lot of products releases this year.
What do you think will be the most popular in demand?
Well, luggage, carry-on range is the most popular products by far. And I think when we launch the soft goods, I think soft goods is going to be very, very popular as well. Because one is our soft goods is going to work with our suitcases like perfectly. Yes. They're also amazing standalone products. So that we're going to launch, I think, first half of the year.
Awesome. So look, we'll work towards wrapping up, man. This is an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for your time. The last question I'd like to ask you is, what would you share with anyone looking to start or grow a physical product-based business, now doing it two times reasonably successfully?
I think starting a physical product and business is actually very, very hard. there are many, many things that you need to be careful. Like there are many, many things that you need to do, and not just a branding and marketing and a website. You also need to be able to know the entire supply chain. My biggest advice for people when they start a physical product is that to know your margin. So what is your gross margin? What is your contribution margin after delivery and marketing? You know, a lot of people actually, you'll be surprised that many, many people don't actually know their margin. And that's the biggest piece of advice I give to people. What is your gross margin? You know, what is your delivery cost? And what is your marketing cost? So that's the biggest advice.
If people want to find out more about yourself and your work, where's the best place people should go?
The best place to find my work is go on to July.com. And buy yourself a piece of luggage.
Well, thanks so much, Rich. Really appreciate your time, man.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's
You're
been
welcome.
Amazing.
So if you really enjoyed this interview and you have an e-commerce store or brand and you're looking to scale it up, so you haven't, like, you're not looking to launch, but you've actually, you want to scale it up, I highly, highly recommend this new course that we're launching called E-Commerce Masters, where Rich is one of our instructors, where he teaches how to work with manufacturers, how to scale your operations. And we have five other incredible instructors who have all built very, very large e-commerce brands. They're legit founders, legit practitioners. If you want to know more, you can go to founder.com/e-commerce masters. And if you want to know how to start an e-commerce store, we also have an incredible course as well taught by Greta Van Riel, who's launched 4 multi-million dollar e-commerce stores. You can find out more, just go to founder.com/e-commerce. All right, guys, I'll speak to you soon.
Hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed this interview. As you might already know, our mission at Founder is to help tens of millions of people every single week with our content, either start or grow their business, which is exactly why we're partnering with world-class founders such as Damon John, Alexa Von Tobel, Greta Van Riel, and so many more to teach crucial skills such as negotiation, finance, e-commerce, and so much more. So if you'd like to get access to these free exclusive trainings, please go to founder.com/free. These are 100%. We go super in depth on teaching a particular topic, and I know that you're going to love them if you enjoy this podcast. So just go to founder.com/free. All right, guys, I'll see you in the next episode.